Today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at theqfilmcast.net. Just click the link in the upper right-hand corner and choose from over 150,000 titles for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's Audible.com.
Q.
Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger Studio. Once again, this is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're listening online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thank you for tuning in. If it's your first time with us, let me tell you what we do. We're the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week, Jolly Roger Studio, where we gather around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our weekly top three list, inspired by the movie in question. Yeah, let's get into this.
Right.
This week, there is no forgiveness because we're queuing up the 1992, suddenly my life doesn't seem so bad, cult film, Bad Lieutenant, starring Harvey Keitel. Some call it entrancing, some call it unwatchable, some call it a classic. So if you're curious, keep listening, see what we call it. So let's get into this, guys.
Yeah.
Once again, I am Michael, along with, to my left, James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Well, I'm doing okay. You know, I mean, all my vices are in check.
All right.
The only thing I OD'd on this week was pizza.
Okay.
Possibly.
Fair enough. I think we're all aware of that.
Yeah. Too aware of that, actually. Mm-hmm. Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear.
Hey, hi.
How you doing today, man?
Bad.
Yeah. Bad? Did you say bad?
Bad.
Okay.
In honor of the film.
Yeah. Whatever you are,
it's not
just
very
bad.
Just, you know, I've done some things.
That's pretty.
I've done some things.
Oh, Lord, I've sinned. Whatever. Max Gumbo Johnson.
Good evening. What's happening?
I am just sitting here patiently in my chair waiting to get this thing going.
Oh,
me anxiously, too. Anxiously.
As am I.
To get this thing going, sir.
Let's go.
We can't go yet because we have to introduce our producer. You know, he's the greatest producer in the history of this Q film.
That's what I've heard.
I've said it for years.
At least half a year.
Right.
Adam the Bomb Rogers. So there you go, guys. And let's get into how you keep up with this. Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube channel, all that.
Yep.
I specifically think you should go to the QFilmcast.net.
.net?
Yeah, you go there. Listener feedback. Let us know how we're doing this episode as well as all the rest. And that's that. We love feedback, so let us know. All right, here we go, guys. You ready to cue it up? Cue up the conversation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, man. We got to that in a hurry. I like that. We're talking about Bad Lieutenant. You know, I think there's been a couple renditions, right? Is the Nicolas Cage one, Port of New Orleans, is that a remake or is that an addition? I never understood
that. Neither one.
It's just a just a story about a bad lieutenant. They just put Bad Lieutenant on there because they thought it would help sell the film a little bit.
Okay.
It's a Herzog, though.
It's a Herzog.
It's a Werner Herzog. I put the iguana in there because he is my bestest friend, and I wanted him to have a starring role. His name is Julio.
Wow. Wow, Leo. Yeah, I've heard that there's an iguana tie-in. Maybe we can talk about that film some other time.
Yeah.
Yes, please talk about my film.
Let's talk about this film, Max. We're talking about 1992, the original Ground Zero of Bad Lieutenant films, Harvey Keitel. Written by Victor Argo, Paul Calderon, Abel Ferrara. Ooh, the Sausage King of Chicago.
Abe Froman.
No, it's Abe Froman. I'm sorry. This is Abel Ferrara. And Zoe Lund. You know who Zoe Lund was, Max?
She was Miss 45. Also by Abel Ferrara.
Let me tell you something real quick here, Abel Ferrara. I never seen his films. In the last 2 months, I've seen three.
Wow.
This is my trilogy of terror here. I went and seen MS-45.
Not MS-45. Miss 45. Multiple Sclerosis 45.
Well, give me another Colt 45. I don't care. I also saw King of New York and then this one. Go figure. And those are all of his films, too. He's really known for this one, Bad Lieutenant.
Well, so, King of New York's fairly popular.
It's fairly popular. He has his own thing going. Can we all agree on that?
I wish they'd throw Driller Killer up on Netflix.
Never seen it, did you?
Oh, yeah. Years and years ago. What's it like? It looks like a horror movie made by a first-time director.
Can't wait. All right, so stars, obviously, Harvey Keitel, Victor Argo, Mean Streets, True Romance, Taxi Driver. This guy plays the same character in every film. You know what I'm talking about, too. The bald dude.
Yeah.
The very New York copy guy.
Yeah.
Let's give a shout out to the nun, played by Frankie Thorne. She was in Stigmata. You know what she played in that film?
A nun.
Yeah. And there is none better.
Oh,
that was so bad. So stupid. That was a sin. You know what that was? That was an unforgivable sin.
That was a bad pun.
Ratings. Let's talk about this. Oh, wait. First of all, I'm so sorry. Let's talk about what this inspires. Our top three. I totally forgot about this. Right. I'm looking at my notes. I went right by it. Can't forget this. It inspired something, as they all do.
Sure.
Top three. What gumbo?
I think we ought to let... Adam's going to have to do it.
No, that's the currency.
That's the currency.
Oh, that's the currency. Oh, this one. Yeah, that's right. Top three crooked bad cops.
Crooked cops.
Right.
They're bad.
I don't know if we call them bad, because bad just means you're bad at your job.
No.
Well, was this guy...
Not inept cops.
This guy was pretty good at his job.
So okay, just don't confuse bad with inept.
Yeah.
Crooked. They're not necessarily here to protect and serve. Okay, so let's get into ratings here. Let's get into IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes first before we get into ours. Because we do that every week, so why change? IMDb, this film, 7.1. Hard sub, what do you think of that?
I can see why people would rate it highly like that.
Okay. What about Rotten Tomatoes? It's 77 with the critics, 74 with the users. What do you say, Hoodie?
That's pretty close.
You think so?
That is close.
Doesn't seem absurd.
Those are close numbers.
Doesn't seem absurd.
Only separate about a few.
Yeah. It's like an election. You get a 3-point margin. Let's talk about what we have here. Get into the film. Listen to a bit of a trailer.
All right.
We'll come back and tell you what we thought. Here's what you have. And put the kids to sleep because we're watching Bad Lieutenant. And how bad is he?
He's real bad.
Pretty bad.
He's pretty bad. If you haven't seen this, here's your premise. If Police Lieutenant Harvey Keitel's life could get any more sordid, he could probably sell tickets. The least of his vices is gambling, which has gotten him in Dutch with the mob. He abuses his body with drugs and his soul with hookers. He's bad and he knows he's bad. He abuses the power of his position in every way he can, shaking down criminals, stealing evidence, and selling drug dealers their immunity by jacking their drugs. Yeah, this dude is rank, and we haven't even talked about the rank scenes. But Keitel's lieutenant reaches a wall when he is forced to investigate the sexual assault of a nun. Her ability to forgive the perpetrators unleashes the ultimate identity crisis in a man whose identity is rooted in self-destruction. Probably not a good situation.
Nope.
This is the film that 22 years after its release is still talked about, so listen to see where the five of us place this one in the pantheon of early 90s classics.
Ooh, classy.
I like that. I added that last part, man.
You did. I like
yeah.
that.
So here it is. Let's take a break and listen to a snippet. 1992's Ode to Police Brutality, Bad Lieutenant.
Bad company.
Oh, you got the money?
What money?
Maybe, because your copy won't keep.
Just put $120,000 on tomorrow's team.
Bad habits.
She's going to kill you, man.
You want a drug counselor?
Drug dealer.
Bad intentions.
Destroyed that young girl, and she forgives you. I don't blow your face apart.
Bad news.
This game is over.
Bad lieutenant.
Get back. Police activity.
In a world where everyone has a scam.
Mr. Eugene has a cat.
Everyone has a story.
Sad.
Don't you want this crime avenged?
And everyone has an angle.
Wanna make a bundle?
I wanna get paid.
The Dodgers are gonna win the series.
Someone has to pay.
Dodgers down by three.
This guy will come by your house and blow your house up with your wife and kids and everybody in it.
Talk to Jesus.
Keitel is the bad lieutenant.
I've had a bunch of bullets since I was 14. No one can kill me. I'm blessed.
Okay, so there you go. There's a piece from the 1992 film that we're talking about. Bad Lieutenant, directed by Abel Ferreira and starring Harvey Keitel. Let's get into a little bit of did you know. Facts, figures about the film. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Did you know?
It's a weekly occurrence. Did you know that's a weekly occurrence?
I didn't know that.
Let's talk about this. Gumbo.
Yep.
Did you know that Abel Ferrara started making amateur films on Super 8 in his teens before making his debut with violent exploitation films such as Driller Killer and Miss 45?
I didn't know that, but I would have made an educated guess that it did.
Yeah.
Since 90% of the directors have done that.
Yeah, right? I guess so. Did you know the guy that directed 13 Assassins was 5'4"?
Really?
Yeah. Whoa. Okay, sorry.
Giant of a man.
Yeah, giant of a man. Basically, his films generally deal with faith and redemption and deeply flawed characters trying to conquer demons.
Yeah, is that what it says?
Yeah. This film actually was set to star Christopher Walken. Did you know that, Hoodie?
I did not.
Yeah, could you see that happening?
Not after having seen Keitel do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see. Check this out. There's usually very little music in his films, and the main character almost always dies.
Mm.
All right. Mm.
Gumbo.
I like this guy.
Did Miss 45 die? Of course not. Remember. Of course she did
don't
not.
I don't think so.
She couldn't have because she helped write this film.
Well, not in real life.
Oh. he's talking about in the movie.
She is dead, though. The girl.
Yeah, Harvey Keitel's character's real name is unknown. That's amazing to me.
I thought there was one point in the movie somebody called him Mo.
Yeah, but that could be a slang.
When he pulled him into the club.
That could be a slang, though.
Could be his
Maybe
real
he
name.
Said, yo!
I almost positive he said Mo.
No.
Yeah, the bouncer dude.
Yeah, the bouncer guy.
Premiere voted this movie as one of the 25 most dangerous movies. What's that mean?
Dangerous?
Why is it dangerous? Is it going to bite you? Is it going to shoot you?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Might scar you.
Yeah, right?
For life.
Currency. So, you know, we don't use thumbs up.
They shot it in only 18 days.
That's right. Why didn't I? Oh, I did write it down. I didn't read
the most interesting did you know and you didn't even
I'm sorry.
Name this dude here.
I jumped around on my notes. You're right. Filmed in only 18 days. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. So we don't use thumbs up, thumbs down. We don't do that because it's stupid.
Because it's bad.
It's stupid. Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad way to rate a film.
Right.
We let the movie decide how we're going to judge it. This one's fun. This is interesting. I don't even know how to introduce this. 1 through 10. 1 through 10, those. Oops. 1 through 10, those. I don't even know what those are.
What was that again?
Childish whines. I don't know. Right.
That's clinched, an Adam whine.
Right. Clinched whines. You guys put a name on. I don't know what that is. But if you watch the movie, that's funny. What is the Gannett? 1 through 10, what? Let's get on with it. It's queued up by the gumbo.
Right.
Yeah. And I want an explanation. Why did you queue up this film for us to watch tonight, Max?
Two reasons, actually.
Yeah.
We were talking a few weeks ago, and I said I'd watched it, and none of y'all had seen it.
Had none of you seen this?
No.
I hadn't seen it.
I couldn't believe that none of y'all had seen this movie.
It's been on my radar for years.
I've seen it.
Well, maybe.
Save it.
So, it had been a while since I watched it, so I watched it the other night, and I said, I'm going to pick that, especially after I found out none of y'all had seen it.
It's a conversation starter. Can we agree?
Oh, it's something to talk about.
All right. Real.
It's a conversation film.
You know what we do? We go over to the man who queued it up. That's Max Gumbo Johnson. 1 through 10. How many of those are you going to give this film?
I'm going to give it a 7. 7.
I don't have to do that 7 times, do I?
No.
No, just once.
Wow. 7. Firm 7, or you could go a different way?
I could move a little bit.
Okay.
It's not going below a 7, I can tell you.
Okay. Right. Let's go on over to Hoodie. Hoodie, Matthew St. Hoodie, 1 through 10.
I give it a 6. I thought it was a little bit obvious in a lot of places, and it just really scared me.
Ooh, wow. James Hard Sub Savage, what are you going to go with here?
This movie was incredibly unsettling to me. I didn't find it enjoyable. I don't think that's the point of it. But like Hoodie said, it was cliche and blatant in a lot of places, so I got to go with a 3, and that's only because of Keitel's performance.
The greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast, what are you going to go with?
I'm going to go 5.
I wish that would stop being funny. Please stop being funny.
Let's see, that leaves it to me, right? Yeah, 1 through 10. Let me tell you, I'm hustling between two numbers, man. It's like this thing I have to talk about.
0 and 1. Yeah.
The numbers I'm stuck between are 9 and 10.
Wow.
9 and 10 on this film. You're darn right it is. And if you give me 2 minutes to flap my jaws, I'm more prepared to tell you why.
Okay.
That's right. This is a convicted film. Convicted.
So what do you give it, a 9 right now?
I'm going to give it a 9.
Write the numbers down.
I'm going to give it, Max, what are you doing?
I'm slacking. This currency has got me thrown for a loop.
You are a bad statistician.
I'm being bad.
All right. Are you done over there, Rain
32.
Man? 32. Rain Man says 32. Definitely 32?
32 what?
Let's get into this thing. Let's jump in.
Okay.
Jumping off the edge, Max Gumbo Johnson. You gave this a 7. I thought you might go a little bit higher up with me.
I might go a little higher.
I got to pull weight on this myself. Go ahead.
You know, maybe it's your turn.
Maybe it is my turn.
You know how some of us feel.
Now you got me doing it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I give it a 7. It's a uncompromising, ugly movie to look at. And I think the guy knew exactly what he was making when he did it. And he pulled no punches. I mean, it got an NC-17. He said, well, you can go back and re-edit. He said, nah, I'll just let it go as an NC-17. And let's say he had recut it to an R. How many more people would have gone to see it? Abel Ferrara, any movie he's ever made, I had seen all of his movies. I've seen a few of them. He doesn't come across as someone who's going to pull punches on anything that he does. He's going to make the movie he wants to make. You know, damn the torpedoes. You either like it and go with it, or you go, oh, this guy's crazy. He's out there, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But he's not going to. He's not going to change his opinion and change his movie around for you. And when you're doing a story like this, you have to show this stuff. If you're going to make this Bad Lieutenant and talk about how awful and terrible this guy is, you might as well swing for the fences. And he did. And like James said, it's not a pretty movie to look at all. But I mean, you think about it. Literally in the first 5 minutes, he screams and curses at his kids. He's listening to the baseball game. He bumps coke. Then
the credits come up.
Then he does some heroin. And then he has a three-way and gets drunk and he's naked all over the place. That's like in the first 5-10 minutes of the movie. But yeah, I respect the guy for that, for just putting his vision out there and not compromising for anybody.
Want to go over to Hoodie? Matt St. Hoodie?
I would love to go over to Hoodie.
Oh, burr.
Let's go over to Hoodie. How you doing over there, Hoodie?
Doing good.
We're going over to you now.
Good now.
Let's talk about this. You gave it a 6, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about it.
Did you know that was a fictitious series?
What's that?
The baseball thing in the movie, the whole thing, played through the whole movie.
I didn't consider that. I assumed it probably could have been, Well, it had to be, really.
That was my only did you know.
Okay.
But I thought it was a pretty good one.
That's a good did you know. I thought it was.
I was really curious about all that. Anyway, so I'm kind of with James. I feel like this was really heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. And I think I said obvious earlier. I don't know if obvious is the word, but there wasn't really a story.
No,
it was just him and how low he could go, and that was it. So, so he, like Max was saying, he had to have the NC-17 to have the full effect of this movie because the story wasn't going to do it. It was how bad can this guy actually get?
You think that's what the story was, just to show a guy how bad he can
get? Well, through the first at least 45 minutes, absolutely it was.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, because I was really searching for anything. I mean, I had a baseball game, this guy gambling, and he was in debt. I was like, what's happening? I need something to latch onto here.
Yeah.
And towards the end, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can read into this if you really want to. And I'm hoping that you did because I'd like to talk about it. But for the most part, it just fell a little short. I feel like it just didn't deliver for me.
This is always talked about as one of the great performances. Mm-hmm. Maybe not of the 90s, like one of them ever. Did you think that's deserved?
Absolutely. You asked earlier about Christopher Walken. Yeah, there's nobody who I can see doing this other than Keitel.
And I don't think a lot of actors would have wanted to do this role. It's a brave role to be seen in that light.
Probably 18 days because they couldn't take it anymore.
Right?
He's like, just use what you got. I can't do it anymore.
Exactly right. What about the producer?
I thought it started out great. I loved it, but it just kept repeating and kept repeating and kept repeating.
Kind of like you right now?
Yeah. Yes.
Like it was addicted to something?
Yeah. And then when the everything happens bad to the nun, and you can see immediately that he's going to go through this redeeming part of the whole entire movie, it never got there until, you know, it just took forever to get there. And that's all I kept thinking during the whole entire movie. Just get to this point. I'm tired of seeing him constantly going down this slippery slope.
Okay.
It just...
All the internal mechanisms didn't outweigh what they were throwing at you heavily on top.
Yeah, I got sick of it after a while.
Yeah,
some would say bored.
Well, we're not sick or bored of you right now, but I'm going to move on.
Bored, so bored.
James Hard Sub Savage, man, you're squeaking out a 3.
Yeah,
that's a dribbler.
No, and I struggled with how to rate this film truly because Keitel is a powerhouse in this. This is a showcase for one man's acting abilities.
And didn't you one time say that sometimes he wears a little thin on you because he does me too?
He does. Yeah. It's like Keitel being Keitel, and this is no exception. I think he ramps it up a notch. I mean, he really showcases his acting talent for sure, and that's why I rated this as high. There's never been a more appropriate title. This is just Bad Lieutenant.
It
does not lie. But like Hoodie was saying, there's simply no narrative. There's no story here. There's never an explanation of why he's bad, how he came to be that way. There's no explanation. I mean, they toss out the Catholic thing as an aside, but you don't really understand if he's being jokey when he says that. Yeah, I'm a Catholic. It's ponderous. You don't know what's going on. It is bleak and disturbing, and I don't have a problem with bleak and disturbing. That's fine. But I want to know why. I want to know why. There's movies that have done this. Taxi Driver, Falling Down, the one man's descent into the abyss.
Yeah.
But with those guys, there's an emotional backstory. There's a reason why you can latch onto them and, you know, kind of follow them down that hole, even though you don't want to go. This guy, you don't. There's no sympathy for him. The redemption thing pops up, but it's not even a redemption thing. It's, can I get this 50 grand? So that's just one more descent into the abyss, which I'm on board with. You know, that's fine. You know, don't be redeeming, because that's kind of a cop-out to me. But there are some moments of really masterful filmmaking in this. There really is. Like when he's going down the stairs after he gets the box of 30 grand, that shot is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a masterwork of a shot. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it, it hits or misses. Mm-hmm. None of the supporting characters were more than one-dimensional. The Catholic stuff was cartoonish. It was almost caricaturish. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to hang on to. There's no redeeming value of anybody, even the nun. So I just couldn't get on board with it. Yeah. It's like, you watch this guy just spiral out of control, and when it's over, you don't care.
Yeah, it's funny how it falls on certain people. I mean, to me, I got this, man.
Me too.
I completely got this, and I was stunned by it because I'm thinking, okay, and here's the way I see it real quick. This is reverse engineering. This and other films like this, for example, Wake and Fright, or even Harold and Maude to a certain extent, these ones where they just throw everything at you preposterously. It's about this. We're going to lather it up, lay it on thick, and instead of giving it to you piece by piece, they start taking pieces away. It's totally deconstructed. And what I liked about this particular one is they did that so well. I mean, before the credits are up, you know this guy is ridiculously bad. And the film dares you to hang in there with it. Because at the end, they need to, halfway through the film, just give you as much as you can handle and then gradually take it away from you. If you're standing there or sitting there watching it and you forget all the other stuff, but yet you're looking at this man deconstructed, which I did, I was completely invested in this guy's journey because it took me so far out and drug me all the way back home again. And the fact that they revealed everything about this guy, they even stood him there naked for you. And a lot of people say, well, why was that scene in there? Because you had to see that he was going to stand there hiding nothing from you. It wasn't just a scene for shock. I mean, there was reason for that. I mean, that's the brilliance of this thing. They showed you everything about this guy, right down to his bare ass, but they never gave you his name. The whole thing worked for me. I don't know why. It really wasn't the filmmaking. It just, at the right place, right time, right filmmaker, this Sausage King guy, Abel Ferreira. Right. My third film of this guy in the last couple of months. I'm a bit of a fan because there's something alluring about what he's doing. I don't know what it is.
Well, you said they showed you everything about this guy, but they told you nothing.
I'm pretty okay with that. I kind of disagree that you need to know this guy's complete backstory.
You don't need to know his backstory, but you got to have an idea of why.
Not really. Not to me, at least. I mean, I feel like we just kind of jump in, you know. On a Tuesday, we catch this guy on a Tuesday.
Tuesday.
He's just a really bad guy. This happens to be the Tuesday with the series. We kind of play those against each other. There, like you said, there's a lot to like about this movie, but for the most part, I just thought it was really preachy. And I think if you start preaching God at me, then I'm gonna lose interest really quick. And I think that's a lot of my problem with this.
I don't know if it came off as a religious film for me trying to put me in the seat of religion. It was really about
It is a redemption story because you have him being the baddest guy that's ever lived, and then he goes to the church to try to. He goes to the church to talk to the nun.
Yeah,
and he tries to get the guy's name so he can get the $50,000, so he can get the reward, so he cannot die.
Right,
right.
She says, "Oh no, I forgive him. It's all cool." And she walks away, and he's screaming, writhing in agony. And then you have the Jesus figure pop up, and then right there he's yelling at him, calling him names, and then
we needed a bit of that right there, didn't we?
Yeah, and then it turns into, "I'm sorry, I've done so many bad things," and he just crushes. He just
He folds.
Yeah, he just self-implodes.
Yeah. This guy's journey, though, I mean, it wasn't just shock value for shock value. It seemed to me like everything had a reason. Once again, you say, well, they just kept going and laying it on and this and that and the other. It never felt repetitive to me. It felt like, okay, that's one more glimpse, one more scene, one more thing, one more this.
Yeah.
And at the end, when it all came crashing down, it was even more resounding to me, you know? Because this guy, he was thinking of new and interesting ways to be bad.
Yeah, the thing that kills me... If you read reviews of this or you read synopsis, it keeps calling it a redemption. I really didn't find the guy
redeemed himself
much at all. No. I mean, first off, he went there strictly for selfish purposes, trying to get the money. Mm-hmm. He wasn't. He didn't really want to help the nun. But how does he redeem himself? He goes across the street and smokes crack with the guys and says, "Oh, you want to try the good stuff?"
Well, he could have killed him.
Yeah, he could have.
He could have turned him in. I mean, it was.
What good would that have done him?
Right. That's mirrored with the baseball. The Daryl Strawberry hitting the grand slam home run,
which I like. I love that whole theme in this film.
Yeah, I thought that was great. So I mean, like I said, there's a lot to like about this, but it just seemed overly preachy.
And I'm not knocking that it wasn't that I didn't find it too much of a redemption story. I just don't pick up where everybody calls it that.
Okay, I don't feel like he redeemed himself, but that's where I'm saying that it actually turned into the redemption story.
Oh, I understand.
It's trying to be. Yeah, that's where he's trying to redeem himself.
I don't think he really tries. The redemption thing fell flat for me. Yeah. I thought it was weak storytelling. I thought it was tacked on, and it never sold. It didn't approach irony because it was too flat for that, and it was never sincere enough.
Yeah, but you know what? It made me put pieces together. This was more of a, you don't need to know this guy's backstory with this church, right? Apparently, maybe, God knows what happened, but he had a real problem with the church.
Right.
Right? So he's at war with that, too. And he never came to grips with that. At the end, he wasn't sure-footed about anything. So it never really sold the premise that you're going to get redemption in church, because he sure didn't to me anyways.
No. And I don't think they attempted to imply that either. There's the storytelling, which admittedly, this was not a narrative-driven story. I mean, this is not what this film is.
No, this is a character-driven story.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. You know, the New York thing has been done. Was that Bo Deedle?
He was in it.
Yeah, the picture taking cop.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that guy.
You know, but it's nothing you hadn't heard 1,000 times before.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this, though, Savage.
No, I mean the New York cop stuff. And I don't know if anybody noticed this, but not a single cop was interested in doing police work. They didn't talk about police work at all.
You see, and that's where this is interesting, because most of these New York cop things is always about a down-on-the-luck cop who's going to go out and redeem himself through his job and catch the bad guy. This was interesting because there was nothing of that in here.
Nope.
There was no actual police work in here.
Nope.
And I think that the fact that he hid behind that was intriguing to me too. How long has he been doing this? How long has he been a lieutenant? He's jumped off the edge, feet first, cannonball style, into his own abyss.
Sure.
And how long has he been doing this? How did he get to that point?
And how many people or cops did he drag down with him?
Yeah, and I mean, all that became intriguing to me, and I was almost like, please don't tell me, because I just don't want to know. I just want to know that's where he's at.
Well, that's where he was.
That lack of story became a good story to me. Max, what do you think?
I say we go to a clip.
Oh, yeah, sorry, clip. Harvey Keitel, here's a snippet, and we'll be back, finish this up, talk about a couple scenes, get into our top three.
How many times you be late for school? Your sister gets to school on time. Huh? What's the problem with you guys?
Dad, it wasn't our fault.
Yo, yeah, whose fault was it? Mine?
No. Aunt Wendy told us to take out the garbage. And she hopped in the bathroom. All morning. We couldn't get in there and brush our teeth or do anything. We had to wait until she got out. By the time we got out, the bus was gone.
So how are we supposed to be on time?
Hey, listen to me. I'm the boss, not Aunt Wendy. When it's your turn to use the bathroom, you tell Aunt Wendy to get out of the bathroom. What are you, men or mice? She's hogging the bathroom. Call me, I'll throw it out.
Okay, so there you go. There's a piece from 1992, Bad Lieutenant, starring Harvey Keitel. That's the film we're talking about here. And Max.
Yes?
With your mouth. You show me with your mouth the scene you want to talk about. I want you to show me with your mouth. Come on. Do it. Move your mouth for me and talk about a scene. Come on. Come on. You know it. Come on. Do it. You want me to call your father?
I'm going to go stand outside.
Don't call my dad. Please don't call my dad.
Talk about a scene, Max. Go ahead and move your mouth and talk about a scene.
I want to talk about the... I know we talked about it already, but the final scene. Well, not the final scene, but the final Jesus scene.
Oh, the Jesus scene, yeah.
I still don't see how that's considered a redemption of this character. He didn't seem like he was searching for forgiveness that bad. You can tell. I mean, he said that they had that line when they were in the parking lot, and the guy says, "Oh, how could you do that to a Catholic?" And he goes, "Oh, You're Catholics, huh? They're going to raise a stink now just because she was dressed in a penguin suit. Women get raped every day.
Right.
He said, the church is it's a scam. It's a scam. He said, oh, you're Catholic? He said, yeah, I'm a Catholic. No, and you see this in Ferrara's movies.
Yeah.
Throughout his movies. There's always, like Miss 45, what she did, dressed like a nun.
Right.
Who's going to be mean to a nun? Right. Apparently a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because they tried to rape her in that movie.
Yeah. And you know, real quick, Max, religion and faith and redemption are a part of the fabric of society. I don't mind that being a theme.
No, I don't mind it.
You can show that theme to me without trying to sell it to me.
Yeah. No, I don't mind it either. I'm just saying that's something that repeats itself in this guy's movie. I kind of really felt, I don't want to say hatred, I don't want to hate anybody, but I really dislike the nun through the whole thing.
Why is that?
I think that's part of what the movie was trying to reflect, not specifically about the Catholic Church, but about religion in general. He was speaking as us, as the audience, to a religion or religious in general, saying, you know, how can you forgive these guys? Do you have that right? Do you have that right to do that, to forgive these guys and let them go? You know how many nuns there are in the world? What if they do this to another woman? And I'm sitting there going, yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah.
I know he was doing it for selfish reasons, but he was right.
Yeah.
And she was wrong. Someone in jail.
Yeah, you can forgive them when they get thrown in the clink, for all I care.
The clink.
But
good word. I hadn't heard clink in a while. Clink,
but sure. And then he has the hallucination and sees Jesus and starts cursing him and yelling at him and stuff. I didn't buy it as redemption.
There are two different trains of thoughts. This guy didn't know which way to go. Remember when he was with the drug dealer, Ms. 45? And she's saying, vampires can feed on other people. All we can do is destroy ourselves and feed off our own flesh. That was in his head the whole time. And then he meets this nun who says, no, we are not here to feed on anything. We're here to give. And he had two influences. And even in the beginning with his kids, did you notice they were twins? One was kind of one way, one was kind of the other. Mm-hmm. And right off the beginning, you knew there was an angel on the shoulder and a devil on the shoulder. He had the drug dealer preaching to him one way. He had the nun who came in inexplicably out of nowhere. He wasn't expecting that. And started to turn this perception of what he's about completely around. And that set the tone for who this guy is. He's a duality.
Right.
Right.
And they mirror the rapist at the end, sitting in the exact same spot in the cars. So he's a father figure to the guy, you know, obviously to the kids at the beginning, but then he becomes the father figure to the rapist, trying to save them, giving them $30,000.
Did you like that whole thing with the nun? You say that's heavy-handed. A lot of people did. It was too much. Did you find that whole act, the raping of the nun, and then he goes and he gets these guys and he gets his money and he whisks them away, and you know what happens. I mean, did you like that whole setup with these guys?
Yeah, I was going to cut in on Max. This is the most interesting scene in the movie, the Jesus scene, go figure. But you're saying this is not redemption. I'm saying that this is the start of the redemption, because he literally cusses at Jesus when he first sees him.
Yeah.
And by the end of his ranting, he's begging for forgiveness, to the point where he crawls to him and kisses his bloody foot. So he says, you know, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me. Kisses the foot. That means God's forgiven you, basically. He looks up and there's the cup. There's the woman saying, oh, yeah, I know the guys who tried to pawn this. And potentially this is God's intervention, you know. That's where it started, and it plays out to the end where he puts him on the bus.
But then he literally goes across the street and smokes crack with these guys.
Yeah,
but he doesn't shoot him in the head.
Well, you know, before that, he was sitting there screaming at Jesus, I don't know why I am the way I am. I don't know why I do the things I do. I don't know this. I don't know that.
Right.
Finds the guys. The first thing he does, boom, lights up some crack.
Crack is whack.
Yeah, crack is whack. I agree. But and then he smokes the stuff they've got, and apparently it's no good.
Right.
I don't know grades of crack.
Yeah,
but
he says
guys want to try some of the good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so you can kind of take that as being a bad thing, but of all the bad things he does, smoking crack is probably the lesser of them. And he's sharing, you know?
There you go.
He's sharing his stuff, so that's a good thing.
That's
He was making them. They didn't have much choice. He was holding a gun to their head.
This film reminded me of...
But he did it to save them.
How?
Well, he wanted to get them. He even says, get out of the city, never come back to this city, saying, you know, he gives them $30,000.
Yeah, he does.
Okay, so, and what do you think junkies are going to do? They're going to get around the corner, jump off the bus,
and
go spend the money.
That's exactly what I would have thought.
That was stupid for him to do that.
I get it, but that's not the...
Yeah. No,
that was him trying to save what he sees as himself, is in these kids who, you know, raped a nun or bad guys. He's saying, here's $30,000.
It's not those, he was saying, here's this
late,
money.
It's too late to help me. Maybe it'll help you get out of town. Get out of town.
Take the money. Start over.
Right.
Well, he definitely had regret. He
would whine about it.
Yeah.
He whined a lot about it.
A lot.
This is a bad dude, Savage. What do you think was the scene that made him extremely bad? There were so many to choose from. What scenes stick out to you?
There are, like I mentioned earlier, there are moments of masterful filmmaking in this thing. Yeah. And they do revolve. The entire film revolves around Harvey Keitel's performance. to me, as I mentioned, when he's leaving Mamacita's house and the little guy, mm-hmm. going down that stairwell, just the rife paranoia, that and the scene where she shoots him up with heroin. And she obviously shot him up with something. I don't know if it was antibiotic or something, but that was a real shoot up. I mean, she shoved that needle in his arm.
She was the devil.
With something.
Because you know, everybody was after his soul. And she was. I mean, not only was she shooting him up, she's telling him, you're here to destroy yourself. Yeah. You're here to
eat
yourself.
That was such a nice monologue, too. Yeah. I actually wrote down to talk about it, and then you said that there was no good, you know, dialogue in this. I thought that was just awesome. Well,
that made my skin crawl.
It did me, too. I thought
I didn't say there was no dialogue. I said the story was weak. But that scene where he just drifts off while she's talking and just drifts off. It's like, again, it's one of those long static shots where he just drifts down and down and down and down into the business. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece of filmmaking. But again, it's just the nuance of Harvey Keitel's performance.
Yeah, boy, it was good.
It's really powerful, but I didn't get much more out of it than that, than just Harvey Keitel's performances.
You know what I got at the end? The thought that came to me was, your soul matters. You can try to pretend it doesn't. You can try to pretend and live in defiance of it. But in the end, your soul matters. You will answer for your actions internally. Maybe not to the law. He was never arrested. Mm-hmm. He never had to face the music that way. Mm-hmm. But he had to face the music inside. And I think that was kind of the theme to me. I don't know, that's what I got out of it.
Hey, so what do you think made him the baddest scene?
Come on, man.
Like,
was it the girls in the car?
That's
Adam's favorite scene.
I don't know. That's kind of a good lieutenant, right? Yeah, I mean,
because
he pulled it off. No, actually, what scene? God, now that I'm thinking about it, let's talk about that in a minute. I want to talk about the scene where he walks in boldly to the store. And he shakes down that robbery scene. I mean, here's these guys standing there. He played that thing out. Right. And I thought that was one of the best scenes in the movie just because I was so vastly entertained by it. He goes in there and jacks the jackers, man. And you can tell he's done it before.
Right. And then he jacks the store owner, I think.
Yeah, he takes the cookies.
Yeah. I mean, apparently, did you get the feeling everybody in the neighborhood knew this was the crazy cop in the neighborhood? They all looked at him like, oh, my God.
Here's this dude.
And here's this dude, Adam. What do you got? I'm going to talk about a scene. What scene do you remember other than Harvey Keitel dancing naked do you take with you after you watch this thing?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, you discussed it. I mean, what about the girls? Stupid idiot girls.
Why? Why do you say that?
There's called a foot pedal. Push it and go.
He's a cop, though, they're young.
He showed a badge, but he's sitting there obviously drunk. I know, but they could leave this situation easily.
They were scared to death.
They could have got away with it and reported him.
He knew that they wouldn't, though. How'd he know that they wouldn't? That's what
They were in the wrong. They stole their dad's car and didn't have their licenses, and they'd been smoking weed at a club that they probably shouldn't have been in the first place.
God, he's done this before, too, hadn't he?
But it was at CD New York, too, that pre-Giuliani, cleaned up New York.
It's down at the Bowery, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were...
Good old 42nd Street. A quick little scene. Yeah. I don't know if a whole lot of people picked up on. When he pulled up to that, it was either an accident or a shooting, and that transvestite comes out and says, oh, there's a key in the back seat. And he goes up, anybody search the car? No, we didn't look. So he hurries up and jumps back there.
Right.
And as he's getting out of the car, that cocaine falls out of his jacket. And everybody goes, what's that? Oh, put that in evidence. And he walks away and he's got that look on his face like, son of a...
that's right.
I can't believe I did that. Because that's how he was making all his money. He was selling half of the evidence for drug money.
What was his family tie-in with this? Was he waking up on the couch of his house?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
That one time.
I assumed it was.
Twice.
Okay. And he had a daughter.
Because that was his daughter he took to
first
communion.
Two sons and daughters.
Yeah, that was his real daughter in there, too.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, did you know?
Was it really? Is Harvey Keitel's real daughter?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Whipping out the did you know. Well after the did you know.
Oh. Everything was whipped out in this film.
Hey, you want to talk about that scene?
I thought in that scene, not knowing, the first time I saw it, I was like, okay, what's going on here? But knowing what comes at the end, and then they have that flash of Jesus on the cross, and then he's standing, in that crucifixion pose when he's standing there doing that. It's like it's almost like he feels like he's sacrificing himself.
He got some bad religion somewhere.
I took it more as him kind of mocking Jesus.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, he's standing naked in a room with his arms out going,
okay, nice. I didn't consider that. Was that what was going through his mind when he was doing it?
To me, it was because you said, throughout the movie, he would bash the church and God and all that. And then we had the thing that we talked about.
You're right. He was mocking Jesus in that pose.
I didn't feel that. I got more of a puppet thing. Like he felt like he was a puppet.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, like a marionette, or he's just
No, I didn't pick up on that. I didn't think. I thought whatever it is, it definitely is it's a Jesus pose.
You know what we need to do? Let's take another break right now. Let's listen to, I want to just give a snippet of what we talked about a little earlier.
You're going to go watch that again, aren't you? Just real quick. on your cell phone. You know what? Watch ringtone. That again.
That's my new ringtone, yeah. And it's tethered to your number. yeah, we can play that, but I also want to play a little piece of him talking to these girls. Just a tad here. We'll come back in a second and finish it up.
You being bad girls? Huh? Where you coming from?
New Jersey.
Yeah? Got any drugs in the car?
No.
No.
No drugs?
No.
Where were you tonight?
We're at the cat club.
Yeah?
Yeah, we were at the cat club, big deal.
You know, I should take you in for driving without a license and registration, you know that, don't you? That's a serious thing. Huh? You have to call your father up. What? How do you feel about that?
Don't do that.
Yeah? What were you girls doing at the, what was it, the Kit Kat Club? You in the stone there? Huh? Come on, I'll do the right thing if you do the right thing, huh? I know what it's like to get stoned a little bit, you know, to get high a little bit. You getting stoned there? Huh? You have any grass there, coke?
We smoked a little grass.
Yeah? How would your father feel if he knew that you were here now?
You won't tell him.
Well, it depends. What do you think about that? A couple of very beautiful girls, you know that?
Come on, give us a break. Couldn't you just give us a warning for not having for the taillight and let us go home?
Well, you know something, two such beautiful girls like you, I could give you a warning. You want a warning? Well, here's the warning. You do something for me, and I'll do something for you. What do you say about that?
Bad Lieutenant. And yes, he is right there. That's 1992, Starving Harvey.
Starving Harvey.
I think he was really hungry in this film.
Starving Harvey, yeah. Firestein.
What? Huh? starring Harvey Keitel. I have no idea if he was starving or not.
He didn't look like it.
I was starving for more at the end of this thing. Maybe I'm alone.
Well, there's Bad Lieutenant 2, Port of Call.
We might need to watch
that. It's not
that.
2.
It's not Port. It's not a Bad Lieutenant 2.
Who's a badder lieutenant? I have to find out.
Nick Cage.
They're pretty bad.
You think so? If they had to fight to the death, Max, who would win?
Oh, if they had to fight to the death, Harvey Keitel.
You think so?
Because he wouldn't fight. He would just shoot him.
Okay. Yeah, 1992's.
Nicolas Cage would throw an iguana at him.
Oh, you sound like Werner Herzog right there. I got that right. Savage, can I throw to you?
Sure.
You look like you're just in one of those beautiful savage zen states of mind.
That's how I like to stay.
It was like a New York state of mind. Too. And we talked about this earlier. You said this was from the streets. It felt very down at the Bowery, New York. And you've also mentioned that you thought this was beautiful filmmaking. Do you think that was by accident? It seemed like a lot of what worked here was almost by accident to me.
I really felt that way. I think some of it was by design, but some of it, you could really tell that it was the pre-Giuliani cleanup of New York. Everything was seedy. Everything was dirty. Mm-hmm. And I've never been to New York. I know you've been to New York several times. I don't know if any of the rest of you have been to. Once upon a time, it was a place not welcoming. And,
it was bad.
But it felt that way. You could tell some of the street extras were kind of, you know, snatching looks at the cameras. And, you know, that stuff bothers me in a film. It's like, it does. It's like, because it breaks the fourth wall thing. It just smacks of amateurism.
Really?
And I just felt that. And then the absence of sound. I like that technique, the absence of score, the absence of soundtrack, just room tone and just the sound of the activity. It was just the sound of the life.
You could say baseball was it.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That was like the overlying the overlying hum of this film.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, Hoodie? You brought that up with me. You thought that was great. Didn't you? Didn't we talk about that a second? You said you liked the whole baseball.
Yeah, I like the juxtaposition of the baseball Daryl Strawberry with his drug problems.
Exactly.
That was what I thought.
I didn't think about that.
I think I got way more out of this movie.
I guess you.
No, not way more. I read into things stupidly like that.
Did you think that it heightened the tension? That whole waiting for that seventh game heightened the tension to me. It had a place to go. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a nice backbone to the story. I kind of wonder if without that, this thing would have fallen apart. I like that. And I like the way it opened up, too, where it was just a white screen with black credits. It wanted you to hear, this is what you're going to be listening to in this film, this radio broadcast of these games. And it laid that out in the very beginning, like, this is something you're going to have to listen to. This is important stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was.
I didn't take that as being important, as important as it actually, you know, rounded out as being the first time I saw it. I had to go back and watch it again to fit all that baseball stuff into it.
Mm-hmm. But my favorite scene from the whole thing, speaking of the baseball, was when his team starts losing and he gets so mad in the car and he pulls his gun and shoots the radio.
Right.
Yeah.
He has to pull out his siren and take off.
But how ironic that that's the only thing that he had to answer to. I mean, he didn't answer to the law. He didn't answer to any.
He's above the law.
Yeah, he didn't answer to his family. He didn't answer to himself. That became the only thing that
put him in his place.
Right.
Yeah. And what kind of bookie is going to let you just skip out on your debt and double down on the next?
Not his. This one. Right. Not his.
And that's something else I kind of dug too, was at the end when it all fell apart. Cause you knew he shot the radio in game six.
Right.
He went crazy in game five. You're like, what's he going to do in game seven? He's going to kill himself. Nope. He acted like he could occur. He already knew.
It was done.
He was done.
So that removal of that when it should have been the heaviest was cool. Man,
you know what? The spoiler: when he gets shot at the end, everyone just kind of turns their head. Wouldn't most people just run when their shot's being fired?
Well, that's
one shot.
Well, I mean, it was two shots.
It kind of mirrored all the other scenes. You know, there were two other deaths of people being shot in their cars, and everybody was kind of doing the same thing. So now it's him in the car,
loitering around.
Yeah, everybody's just looking for the shock and awe of it. Yeah.
They slowly start to converge on the car. Oh my god! Someone shot the bad lieutenant.
I actually like that too. How they kind of slowly came to the car, and
it was
then
weird.
Yeah, and then finally you see a police officer just kind of nonchalantly walk into the scene and kind of push people back. Away. Yeah,
it made him. It made it feel like he really did die alone. It took that long for someone to even notice him, and he's dead in the street.
Oh, that's a good.
That pre Giuliani era.
Does this one stick?
It sticks with me.
All right.
So what are you staying with, a 9?
Yeah, let's go with 9.
Okay. 9 what?
I'll go with 9. I'll go with 9, but if I watch it a third time, it might get up there. I'll keep that 10 to myself.
Okay.
It's between me and God. It's between me and God, okay?
Okay.
I'll kick it up a notch. I'll go to 7.
All right. Go to 7.
Joining the max train.
You know why you did that?
Nope.
Because it would be a sin and a crime if you didn't. What's worse?
33.
All right, guys, let's get into our top three. Top three crooked cops, bad cops, cops that do not protect and serve. That's basically the theme. We're going to get into that, and that's brought to you by Audible.com, our sponsor. If you go to the QFilmcast.net, you know what you're going to find up there in the corner, Max?
A banner.
No, you're going to find an icon.
It's called an icon.
I thought it was a banner.
Max, I forgive you for that gumbo. I forgive you.
Where were you?
Where were you? Hopefully you're at thecufilmcast.net taking advantage of Audible's free audiobook download. Max, what do you got to lose? It's free.
It's free.
It's free.
Redemption.
It would be, you would redeem yourself because it is a crime not to go and do this.
You've got to redeem that free coupon.
Yeah. You have to pay for the candles though.
That's right. Look, 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, probably your iPad too.
I bet there's a book on there about the history of the films of Abel Ferrara.
There should be, because I'm becoming why am I a fan of this guy? I don't know. Because
he's awesome.
Yeah, you should go there. QFilmcast.net, Audible.com, free audio book download, 30-day free trial. Nothing to lose. Great stuff there. Give it a shot. Click the banner. There you go. Okay, so let's get into our top three crooked cops. Boy, this was fun to think about. There's a few of these out there.
Sure.
Hoodie, you came up with a few.
It's a trope.
You crooked producer. Give me your number three.
Sheriff Nottingham.
Say, huh?
The Sheriff of Nottingham.
A what?
Robin Hood.
I gotcha.
Which one? The Sheriff of Nottingham.
Which are we talking about the cartoon?
No, the movie.
The Fox?
So
which movie?
Let's go with the 90s, since we're in the 90s already.
I like that answer.
And who played him in that one?
Alan Rickman.
Okay.
I like that answer. He was not necessarily a cop. He was a cop for the time.
No, he was the sheriff.
He was sheriff. That's a cop.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He was a sheriff.
Gumbo. I can smell your gumbo, Johnson.
Number three is Joe Cooper from Killer Joe. I'm sorry. I call
it. How's he not number one?
We'll get into that.
Why didn't you? Maybe he's your number one.
Could be.
That is a
bad cop. He was a bad cop. Yeah, I mean, he was a cop and a hitman. And when he didn't have the money for the hit, what did he do?
Buy chicken wings.
He took their daughter, took their sister, like his collateral.
And then
the chicken thing.
When you're sexually assaulting someone with a chicken wing and killing a man with a can of pumpkin pie filling.
That's bad.
It's a bad cop, Hoodie.
It's a mamma jamma.
Hoodie, number three, what you going to go with?
The Professional, Gary Oldman, Norman.
Oh my God! What pills was he taking in that film?
All of them.
You remember the pills he'd take? They never explained that.
Yeah, and it looked like it was like made out of razor blades. Like it just cut him all the way down.
Yeah,
that's right. I thought he was taking like chewing smelling salts or something.
Everyone. All right, so that's number three for you, and Hard Sub Savage.
Tough one. They've taken some good answers. I'll use Colin Sullivan, Matt Damon in The Departed.
Heck yeah.
See, that's a little higher on my list, though.
Yeah.
He was like a mastermind bad cop.
Well, he was bred bad cop.
He was a bred bad cop, right?
He was a bad boy.
He was raised good by the Meeb.
Let's talk about the producer's number two, Crooked Cop.
Did
you do your number three?
Oh, shoot. Can I get in there?
Yeah. Why don't you hit that?
Oops. So sorry. Whoopsie. Number three. Max, you hate this film, but I do remember him as a bad cop, and that's Tom Sizemore in Natural Born Killers.
Yeah.
Oh, I do hate that movie.
Come on. He was so deviant.
I don't care. I hated that movie.
A cop that requests that you pinch his nipples is a bad cop.
It's also a bad movie.
It really,
movie.
And context matters
great
here.
Great movie.
I mean.
Number two, bad cop, producer, go.
Frank Butterman from Hot Fuzz.
I knew was going to be on
he
your
did
list.
It for the greater good.
Do we say NARP or YARP to that? I don't know.
NARP?
YARP? I'm going to give you a YARP because I liked it. All right, number two for Max Gumbo Johnson. Jump in there. What you going to go with?
Hank Quinlan, Touch of Evil. Dirty cop.
Matthew St. Hoodie, patron saint of quality outerwear.
James took The Departed, so I'm going to switch that to Unlawful Entry. Ray Liotta.
Yeah.
Ooh. He was bad.
He was just creepy. Creepy. He did things with his mouth.
Did he? I haven't seen that in a while.
Right. Things with his mouth.
Do a thing with your mouth and tell me you're number two, Savage.
I'll go with Bob. Sin City.
Bob in Sin City.
The partner.
Yeah. Darn right.
Shot his partner in the back.
Yeah, he did.
Multiple times.
Only a bad cop. Even the worst of Harvey Keitel wouldn't shoot his partner in the back.
That's probably why he didn't have a partner, is he?
He probably shot him in the back. I'm trying to redeem him just a little bit.
Yeah.
He would have smoked crack with him and then maybe shot him in the back. Listen. My number two was Killer Joe. I'm just going to stick with that. Why go into it? I have to keep him on my list. I can't remove the man.
That's a great pick.
From my list. Yeah. Best fried chicken scene ever in a film.
It'll change your opinion of fried chicken.
Was it crispy original recipe, Max? You know?
At first it was.
Savage. What did it become? It just became wet at the end. Didn't it?
Sloppy.
It became overcooked.
KFC should have came out with a new recipe just called wet. Right. Crispy original or wet?
You wanted crispy original or Gershon?
Or after Joe.
Gershon. Number ones.
One. I got one worse than Bob in Sin City. Jackie Boy.
In what?
Sin City.
I love the film. I can't remember Jackie Boy.
Was he a cop?
Jackie Boy?
Benicio del Toro?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
He was a cop.
I stand corrected. Yep. He ended up getting something through the head.
Yeah, but we don't know if he was a bad cop. He was a hero cop.
He was a bad cop.
He was a hero cop.
He didn't die like a hero.
He beat his girlfriend.
All cops do that. That's what makes them cops.
Right. Cops. I'm going to call the cops on you.
Beat their women.
If you don't give me your number one gumbo.
Oh.
Spill it.
Hands down. No choice about it. I don't care who picks it. Norma Stansfield. The professional. Number one.
Yeah.
All day long.
Oh, I picked that as number three.
Well, you know, for me, because that's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
And the margins are all thin between all these.
Iconic role. I mean, it just.
Why don't you drop your number one like it's hot?
I'm going with Captain Dudley Smith, played by James Cromwell, L.A. Confidential.
Good film.
Yeah. He's probably the crookeder of the crookedest of the cops. Yeah.
He's real crooked.
He's my favorite.
La Confidencion.
I love that guy. He killed that movie.
What about you, Savage? You going to spill your number one onto us? What is it?
Oh, clearly it's Alonzo Harris, Training Day, Denzel.
It has to be one of those.
Clearly.
He has to be on.
It's a good one.
I'm pretty sure it's James Cromwell.
I'm pretty sure it's Leon. Norman.
It's Alonzo Harris.
These are all good answers. Usually I poo-poo on somebody here. I got to go with all these are great answers. You want to know my number one is, don't you?
Probably something we're going to poo-poo on.
Look, this guy was a crooked cop because they called him a crooked cop in the film, and he was a catalyst for everything, and that is Captain McCluskey from The Godfather.
Yep.
McCluskey, yeah.
He got shot in the throat while he was eating his linguine.
His ziti or something.
No, veal. Best in the city.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Michael went and got the gun from the toilet.
And Michael even said, and he's a bad cop, and he's a crooked cop, and I'm going to kill him.
Yeah, he did say that. After he broke Michael's jaw.
Broke it bad. And no one suspected Michael because he was the calm
son. He was the good boy.
Let me do this Twitter thing, Rob. I got a ton of responses. Yeah. I'm going to rip through this real quick. At Kevin Dillon, 1316. Kurt Russell in Dark Blue.
Yeah.
Yep. Lee West at Lee West 82 says Richard Gere in Internal Affairs. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
No doubt about that. At MSUREERUS, Denzel in Training Day. Ron Rifkin in The Negotiator. Neil Prentice at Neil Burt, Denzel. Matt Damon from The Departed. And the man from Babe. Oh, okay, in L.A. Confidential.
Yeah,
okay. You know, I was trying to understand what he was asking. The guy from the movie Babe.
That'll do, Pig.
I thought he was calling the guy a Babe.
Babe. Oh. Get it right.
He was in it.
Jamon Discovery at Jamin Disc. Hank Quinlan, Touch of Evil. Dan at Movie Revolt. Matt Damon. Dudley Smith in L.A. Confidential. Norman Stansfield at Wits Movie Revolt. John Spencer, David Morse, and J.T. Walsh, Negotiator. Check this out. At Cakeless Roses, The Cop. From my spit on your grave. He was a rapist, but I'm bringing this movie back.
No.
Don't know what that means.
Let it die.
Cinema Chase at Cinema Chase. Mike Figgis, Internal Affairs. Beardy Freak at Grindhouse Dave. Denzel, Russell Crowe in LA Confidential. Leota in Narc. Michael Douglas in Black Rain. And at Wits Movies says, what's his face from Super Troopers?
Yeah, that guy.
Oh, yeah. What's his face? I got Eckert from the original Batman.
That was a little bit long, but I want to give everybody a shout out, though. Everybody stepped up there. Max, what do you got for honorable mentions? Anything real quick before we close it?
Just a couple of, where was it? Ray Donlan, also Lieutenant.
Yeah.
Harvey Keitel in Copland. Mm-hmm. Which one are you pointing at?
The other L.A. Confidential.
Oh, are they all bad cops in L.A.?
Yep. L.A. Confidential.
It's Confidential.
It's an amazing movie.
Oh, Jack Vincennes in L.A. Confidential. Yeah.
full of bad cops.
Brian Dennehy and Teasel in First Blood.
Oh, why didn't I think of that? Yeah. He was more of a misunderstood. Was he bad?
No, he was just a jerk.
Caused the death of a lot of people.
When you tell a guy, well, you can get something to eat 30 miles up the road, you're just an a-hole cop, aren't you?
But then hose him down. The guy in the helicopter was the bad cop.
So there you go, guys. We talked
One more shout out.
Go, give it.
Bad cop in the Lego movie. That was literally his name. Bad cop in the Lego
outstanding.
Movie. And his other side was good cop.
Oh, that's fantastic. Just like a Lego would be. Sides.
Wow.
Yeah, that's our breakdown of the film, 1992's Bad Lieutenant. And as well as our top three crooked cops. I think we did pretty well with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man, a lot of them out there when you think about it. We could talk all night about that.
Yeah.
But let's talk now about next week's show. We're going to go to the patron saint of quality outerwear, and that's Matt, St. Hoodie.
Okay.
You want to cue
it up? LA Confidential on Netflix?
It was.
It was for a while. I don't think it is right now.
Dang.
La Confidential.
Man, I guess
I kind of want to watch that now. But but originally, I came in here wanting to see Doctor Strangelove.
Uh-oh. Or How I Learned to Love the Bomb.
That's the one.
Okay.
Stop worrying.
Stop worrying. I learned to love the bomb.
Yeah. What if I told you that I don't think I've ever seen this film?
You know what? I don't like this movie, and I can't figure out why, and I want you guys to tell me. I fall asleep every time.
Savage, are you a connoisseur of this movie?
No, I'm not a connoisseur.
You know it.
I've seen it, and I keep calling it Dr. Lovejoy for some reason.
Maybe that's because that's what Adam calls you once we turn off the mics.
Right.
So, yeah.
He makes that sound. What's that sound, Adam?
You're forgiven.
Why can't it be bigger?
Dr. Strangelove. See, that's what's great about this show is I need to see this film. Yeah. And you're giving me a reason to do it.
You have to.
I'm going to. Dr. Strangelove.
It's a classic.
It's a classic. Time to cue up a classic.
Yeah. Another black and white.
Hey, look, I'm calling this film a classic, too.
It is a classic.
A lot of people would agree with you, sir.
I'm going to agree with myself.
All right.
But next week's Dr. Strangelove, this was Harvey Keitel in 1992's Bad Lieutenant. Yeah, inescapable, iconic role. I think he's always going to be this dude to me.
He'll always be Winston Wolfe to me.
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know.
Could always be the pimp and taxi driver.
That's next week, guys. We're going to get into Dr. Strangelove. And you guys stay safe. Thanks for dropping into the queue. We'll see you next week when we queue up the film Dr. Strangelove. See you then. Jesus.